game. So great to have you here, Wheels. And you're giving us your insight into this launch and Crew 12's mission. You work in the Astronaut Corps. These are your friends and your coworkers who are going up today. We're happy to have you here.
Well, we're very excited. It's a beautiful evening, early morning, perfect time for a launch, and we're very excited to get our crew up to the space station, get working on our science.
Absolutely. And as we look out at this beautiful overnight picture of our launch pad, we've been here early in the morning, the entire SpaceX and NASA teams getting ready for this moment and getting ready for tanking, which starts at T-minus 35 minutes. We have a crew on board as well, and the crew flying today is the following. NASA astronaut, Jessica Meir, she is our commander, and she is in the seat second from the right. There's her putting the arms up. We have NASA astronaut Jack Hathaway, who is seated to her right, your left, at the mustache, and we see his knees and boots clearly in frame. And then we also have ESA astronaut Sophie Adnot. She is the mission specialist today, and she is on the far right of your picture. And then lastly, Roscosmos cosmonaut Andrei Fedyaev. He is our mission specialist, and he's all the way to the far left of your screen there in the corner. You'll hear much more from them in a moment, but first, here's a little more about Wheels. Let me tell the audience about you a little bit, because you do have quite the resume. Colonel Doug Wheelock joined NASA in 1998. He's a native of New York. He holds degrees in applied science and engineering from the U.S. Military Academy in West Point. He also has a master's in aerospace engineering from Georgia Tech. And there you see Colonel Wheelock, dual-rated aviator and logged more than 7,000 flight hours on the space shuttle, as you see him launching right there with his friends. The retired Army colonel has spent more than 178 days in space. He flew on STS-120 back in 2007, and then here you see him on Soyuz as a flight engineer for Expedition 24, and he was ISS commander for Expedition 25. Here he is walking out in space, conducting 6 total spacewalks, more than 43 hours out in space. Colonel Wheelock currently serves as the co-chair of the Joint Test Panel for NASA's Human Landing System. We're going to get into that later in the broadcast. He's also responsible for building the Artemis crew, training strategy for returning astronauts to the moon and safely back to Earth, and as you just saw, getting his haircut in space, showing us all. So it's so good to have you here, Doug. I mean, clearly your resume is impressive. You've been to space, you've walked in space, and now you're training our future astronauts to land on the moon. Today, now, we're focused on Crew 12, and these are your fellow astronauts who you know well. What are they feeling in this moment?
This is sort of the culmination of years and years of hard work for them, and, of course, decades of dreams for them to fly in space. They've been training for this moment, and we have two veteran astronauts that are flying and two rookies. So it's a great mix, and it's a truly international crew as well. And we have an astronaut from ESA and two NASA astronauts and, of course, a Russian cosmonaut as well.
Absolutely. And I think I've heard other astronauts say, and you would know this, once you've flown in space, you've got the two veterans, they like to see the rookies experiencing their first space flight.
Right. There's real joy in witnessing others experience this magic of going to space. So it's just a thrill for me to see these, I call them the youngsters now. They call me Papa Wheels. Some of these guys call me Papa Wheels. So it's just great to see them experience this euphoria of flying in space.
And we're also excited to watch you watch them.
Yes, they do have some time to themselves. Now, as you get closer to launch, there's some time compression as well. You just heard that the hatch is closed now, and so the time is going to start to compress for them as well. So,
and here's a dual view. What you're looking at here on the left in the big screen is the crew inside their space capsule, inside their spacecraft, I should say. And then in the lower right, that's the crew access arm as it extends out to the rocket, bridging the gap between the spacecraft and the launch tower. That would be the way that astronauts in this moment, should something go wrong when we get closer to tanking, they have the option up until that point to use that crew access arm. But then once we get to tanking, then that crew access arm retracts away and they have to have an emergency egress if something were to happen. We're also taking questions, as you can tell, as listening to Doug's biography and that little video reel. He's a wealth of information. So if you'd like to tap in and get a question into our astronaut, just look there at the bottom of the screen, hashtag AskNASA. We'd love to hear from you. We're taking your questions live using that hashtag AskNASA. So if you're watching on YouTube and X, just drop us a question. Join the conversation. Love to have your question. We'll answer them live right here on the air. I say we, Doug will. Wheels has got all the information, and we'll he's more than happy to answer your questions, and he does a great job at doing it. All right, let's take a closer look at the crew heading to space today. Dive in a little bit into each individual crew member. Jessica Meir, she is a NASA astronaut commanding this Crew 12 mission. She's a native of Maine and spent a total of 205 days in space on her only space flight back in 2019. Meir launched on a Soyuz rocket, and she was part of the first all-female spacewalks with fellow NASA astronaut Christina Cook, totaling nearly 22 hours in space. Jessica earned a biology degree from Brown University. And not training for spaceflight, Meir enjoys skiing, hiking, cycling, and scuba diving. And she's conversant in both Swedish and Russian. Very smart commander, very capable, been to space, and you know her well.
Absolutely. Jessica is awesome. I actually been in Russia with her while she was training as well. And I really admire her skills for learning a new language, because that was the toughest part of my studies, getting ready to fly on the Soyuz, is learning Russian. So.
And she, just the other day in a press conference, they didn't have the translator. It wasn't on yet. I don't know why, but she went ahead and translated Fedyaev on the fly. So you can tell she knows her stuff. And
she
so
did. Yeah.
An impressive candidate and commander as well. Next up is your Crew 12 pilot, NASA astronaut Jack Hathaway. He was born and raised in South Windsor, Connecticut. He's married with two children. The Connecticut native earned bachelor's degrees in physics and history from the U.S. Naval Academy. Hathaway completed an operational tour aboard the USS Nimitz in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, as well as Operation Inherent Resolve while aboard the USS Truman. He has more than 2,500 flight hours in 30 types of aircraft and flown 39 combat missions. This will be his first spaceflight.
Very excited about Jack going. The only downside to Jack, he's a Naval Academy graduate, coming from a West
from
Point graduate.
From an Army guy.
We have great fun during the Army-Navy games. We did fare so well this year. The RB team, but Jack's just a great test pilot and really a wealth of knowledge. And he also has he's a wealth of dad jokes as well.
Is he one of those?
So Jack's got some great dad jokes.
Very good, very good. And along with the commander, Jessica Meir, and Chris Williams, who's already up at the space station, they kind of form a little New England contingent there.
Yeah, Jack's from Connecticut, and with Jessica being from Maine, and of course, Chris Williams on the station. He spent a lot of time in Massachusetts and Boston, and it's gonna be a New England contingent up there.
Yeah, they'll have a nice something to talk about as they sit around their clam chowder, should they have any. Here's your mission specialist now, Sophie Adno. She's representing the European Space Agency, or ESA. This will also be her first trip to space. The French native studied engineering and specialized in spacecraft and aircraft flight dynamics during undergraduate work in France and received her master's degree from MIT. Sophie joined the French Air Force in 2005, where she trained to become a helicopter pilot. That's something that's near and dear to your heart as a fellow helicopter pilot yourself. She was selected as an ESA astronaut candidate in 2022 and has been training since then for today's mission.
Absolutely. And as a helicopter pilot, she's perfectly ready to go to the moon with us as well. So.
you haven't named her as such, but you know she.
That's not official.
Yeah, that's right. But she's got those skills that you're looking for.
She's got those skills. We're definitely trading in helicopters these days. Get ready to go back to the moon.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that more when we talk about the Artemis mission, which is just nearby on Launch Pad 39B. But in the meantime, let's round out our crew with mission specialist Andrei Fedyaev. He is a cosmonaut with Roscosmos, Russia's space agency, of course. As a major in the Russian Air Force, he's logged more than 500 hours in Russian aircraft. Back in March of 2023, he launched as a mission specialist as part of Crew 6, where he spent nearly 186 days aboard the International Space Station. Andrei is attempting to become the first Russian cosmonaut to fly twice inside the Crew Dragon capsule. That is your Crew 12. In fact, I think he'd be just the first astronaut in general to fly twice.
I think so.
I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah. And Andrei is just an incredible human, just a great guy, and a lot of fun to be around. He's already flown in space, and he's very, very competent and on orbit as well.
And apparently we'll be playing some harmonica once he gets on board. He was mentioned he's taking that as his musical instrument.
I hear that Jessica's bringing a piccolo.
She is.
Andre's bringing a harmonica, and there's a couple of guitars on board as well. So I think we're going to have some concerts.
Yes. They're going to put on a performance. I don't know if we'll get to hear it, but if it's good, I hope we do. Well, Crew 12 trained extensively for this mission. Let's take a look now at their training. And as you look at this, Wheels, this is all very familiar to you. Talk us through what they're doing here.
So what you're seeing here is that this is the mock-up of the space station that we have in Houston. And it's a full-scale, high-fidelity mock-up. And we can practice stowage. We can practice all of our translation maintenance of equipment and things in here. So it's a great mock-up facility for us for training.
And then, of course, the training in the SpaceX simulator.
Right, and this is a full-scale simulation of the spacecraft, the Dragon spacecraft.
And then emergency training, of course.
We do emergency training as well. We do medical training, medical emergencies, and reaction to that. We also, you can see Jack suiting up to get in the water, go underneath the water. We train in the Neutral Buoyancy Lab in Houston. This is where we practice our spacewalks. We're in the water. We could pull ourselves to neutral buoyancy as we work on the outside of the space station mock-up that's underwater.
You spend a lot of time in that pool, right?
Absolutely.
Preparing for your own EVAs.
Absolutely. We also do water survival. As you know, the SpaceX Dragon capsule splashes down in the water at the end of the mission.
Right. And as we approach the liftoff of Crew 12, normally when a new crew arrives at the International Space Station, there's a brief overlap, a direct handover between the outgoing crew and the incoming one, which includes a formal change of command ceremony on orbit. But this time, it's going to be a little different. That ceremony already took place just before Crew 11's earlier return due to a medical issue involving one of its crew members. So Crew 11 had to come down just a little early. They safely splashed down in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of San Diego on January 15th, clearing the way for Crew 12's arrival today.
Absolutely. And we were able to do some of that handover in Houston before the crew came into quarantine. So a lot of that has been accomplished already, and we're getting ready to do a handover with Chris Williams once they get to space.
Absolutely. And as Crew 12 gets ready to launch, here's a pre-launch tradition that we would like to share with you, the signing around the mission patch inside the operations and checkout building. Of course, this is inside crew quarters where the astronauts are there, and there they got their patch front and center, but they get to put one on the side and then sign it.
That's awesome. Yeah. This is a tradition that we do, and that's just a fun way to leave our mark.
Our mark is left indeed as you just pass by this area. It's in the hallway there at astronaut crew quarters, the elevator just to the side. They passed that area just a couple hours ago or so, and now we see them live inside spacecraft. So we introduced you to each of the crew members, talked a little bit about them, but now we want to hear directly from them. So let's hear now, starting with the commander of Crew 12, Jessica Meir. Hear her in her own words. She is one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people of 2020. Speaking of the very rookies she mentioned, up next is Crew 12 pilot Jack Hathaway, who's counting down the minutes till his first journey to space. And today's launch will be just the second crewed mission ever to launch from Space Launch Complex 40, as you're looking at it live there at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. Crew 9 launched in September 2024, carrying NASA astronaut Nick Hague and Russian cosmonaut Alexander Gorbunov, marking the first time humans had lifted off from Slick 40. Now we're back. PAD's inaugural launch was a Titan 3C back in June of 1965. Let's hear now from ESA astronaut Sophie Adno on her first trip to the space station. T-minus 1 hour and 33 minutes and counting. As we look down at Launch Complex 40. Finally, Roscosmos cosmonaut Andrei Fedyaev sharing his thoughts as he prepares for his second flight aboard Dragon to the International Space Station after making his first space flight on Crew 6. Now heading back as a member of Crew 12 almost 3 years later. Currently, T-minus 1 hour, 31 minutes and counting until Dragon Freedom flies Crew 12 to the International Space Station. We've got the crew inside the spacecraft as we look out at the evening sky. It's early here in Florida, 3:44 a.m. Eastern Time. Air inside the capsule, inside the spacecraft. Commander Jessica Meir, she's the second from the right. And pilot Jack Hathaway. He is the third from the right. We've got ESA astronaut and mission specialist Sophie Adno. She's at the far right. And then all the way to the far left, Roscosmos cosmonaut and mission specialist Andrei Fedyaev. Coming up around 1 hour and 30 minutes, we will check the launch escape system. It's basically doing a health check on this system. And so wheels, this is something you experienced inside space shuttle, inside Soyuz. There's a moment where you want to make sure that your whatever system you're going to be using, it was very different on shuttle from Soyuz, is good to go.
Absolutely. There's a possibility we could do a pad abort. We want to be ready for that. The crew is trained for that, and we have the option to exercise that system if needed. So we'll do a checkout of the automated system. Then we'll hand over to the crew later in the flow when they activate the system from on board as well. So it's a very choreographed sequence, and they'll following those pad checkouts here in the moments to come.
Got just a few seconds before that kicks off. Stand by. While we wait to hear that loop kick in. Talk a little bit about the weather. You can see it in the bottom right-hand side of your screen as our beautiful shot from our helicopter team here at the Kennedy Space Center providing this live view, circling pad 40. Beautiful weather outside, especially for launch. We are now, according to Launch Weather Officer Brian Sizek, who's working this launch, we are now 95% go. That's up from 90.
I'll take those odds.
Those are great ones. A nice overnight launch. There was a weather discussion about a front that just recently came through. We do have a few showers off in the Atlantic, but they're 50 to 60 miles away. The only mild, very mild concern would be a possibility of a cumulus cloud rule or flight through precipitation violation. But now that it's down to a 5% chance, I mean, that just, as you said, bodes extremely well for our launch today.
Those are great odds. And so I think we're going to see a beautiful nighttime launch. And it's going to light up the night. And we're very excited about our crew getting ready to go.
That's right, T0, 5:15 and 55 seconds a.m. Eastern time. And what a beautiful launch it will be. We've got questions coming in already. Yeah. Folks up at this hour, but you know, we've got people all around the world and it different time zones. It could be, one of those good hours. So Let's go ahead and take a few questions now and see what's on folks' mind as they probe Mind of Wheels. Leroy Jones asks, what is the first thing astronauts like to do when they get released from quarantine?
When they get released from quarantine?
I don't suppose they're released from quarantine until they come back from space.
That's true. That's true. So when they get out of quarantine, they're heading to their rocket. So, coming back from space, it takes a few days of testing once you get back on the ground, and then you're released to see your families. Now, there's certain things they don't want us to do. They don't want us to drive for 45 to 60 days because of just sort of motion parallax and things, some other things that could be confusing to your brain once you get on the ground. So, and they're very reticent to let us run outside as well because your balance system is a little bit topsy-turvy when you get back to Earth.
It's like a toddler. I told my son, don't run. Don't run. Is that something you have to tell yourself?
Run. That's very true. And actually, when you get to space, too, there are very basic things you have to sort of relearn in zero-G or micro-G. You have to learn how to brush your teeth, how to drink water, how to eat food, how to go to the bathroom, you know, all these things you sort of have to relearn once you get to space.
Maybe you don't feel like running either, right? I mean, you're aware of what you're capable of doing?
Yes, absolutely. And there are some, obviously, some muscle atrophy and some bone loss and things like that we experience on long-duration flight. And so those things can play havoc on us and rehabilitation as well.
All right, great question. Thank you for that, and keep them coming. Just use the hashtag AskNASA on YouTube and X, and we feature your question live. Let's talk ISS research now. Crew 12 is headed to the International Space Station where they will be doing their research. And here's a closer look now at how some of the great science work is happening up there in low Earth orbit to improve life for us here on Earth. T-minus 1 hour, 22 minutes and counting. Let's take you inside Mission Control now in Houston, where flight controllers are continuously monitoring the International Space Station and the people on board. NASA's Anna Schneider is there live in Houston at Johnson Space Center. Anna, good early morning to you.
New live from Mission Control Houston inside the International Space Station Flight Control Room at NASA's Johnson Space Center here in Houston, Texas. Currently on console, the Orbit One team of flight controllers continue to prepare for today's launch, led by Flight Director Garrett Hain. Today, we will be launching the 12th rotational crew mission to the International Space Station under the agency's Commercial Crew Program. Following Crew 12's arrival to the space station, targeted for Saturday at 2:15 p.m. Central, 3:15 p.m. Eastern, the space station will have a total of 7 crew members representing 3 different space agencies, including NASA, the European Space Agency, and Roscosmos. After tomorrow's docking and hatch opening, Crew 12 will join Expedition 74, including NASA astronaut Chris Williams and Roscosmos cosmonauts Sergei Kudryashkov and Sergei Mikhayev. This trio arrived at the space station aboard the Soyuz MS-28 spacecraft in November, and once on board, Crew 12 will complete a safety briefing and orientation before jumping right in to continue the science and technology demonstrations taking place in the orbiting lab's unique microgravity environment. Expedition 74 began in December following the departure of the Soyuz MS-27 spacecraft and will continue into July of this year. Following the departure of the Soyuz MS-28 spacecraft in July, which will carry NASA astronaut Chris Williams and his Roscosmos crewmates back to Earth, Expedition 75 will officially commence, led by Commander Jessica Meir, who is also commander of the Crew 12 spacecraft today. All of this, of course, coming up after today's launch, so for now we will continue with the countdown, and with under 2 hours before launch, we'll send it back to the Space Coast to Daryl and Doug.
That's right, and we are here at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, looking out at Launch Complex 40 at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. Right now, Crew 12 is inside Dragon Freedom, and so far Crew 12 has completed their comms checks, make sure they can communicate. They're working on those with the teams on the ground. Their seats have rotated from their upright to reclined launch position, which allows them to see and access, of course, those display panels in front of them. They've also completed their suit leak checks to make sure their spacesuits are working properly. And they do that twice, Wheels, both for as they're suiting up, and then they check it again once they're in the spacecraft. Kind of a critical component.
Absolutely.
There.
The integrity of that suit is so important. So we do a couple of checks of those suits to make sure we have no leaks.
If you lose pressure inside the spacecraft, that's where the suits come in.
The suit will inflate automatically connected to the system. So it protects us from a rapid decompression of the cabin.
That's critical, as you mentioned. Of course, the spacecraft is well sealed, especially at the hatch, but because spaceflight is such a risky endeavor, you never know what will happen. And so having a spacesuit that can act as your little Earth by the oxygen and the pressure is critical.
Absolutely. And there, I think the crew, all the crew is wearing the new R2 upgraded suits, which is a different enclosure. And so we'll be checking those new enclosures as well. So this is an upgrade to our suit to allow for adjustability.
And that is really key, because we were learning about these new suits. Mike Fink, of course, flew one on the last mission for the first time. Now all four crew members will have
That's
it.
Correct.
But expandability, and you can get in it easier.
Absolutely, yeah. The donning and doffing in space, because you actually, your spine sort of elongates in space as well. So when you get suited to come back home, you're a little bit bigger than when you are taller when you went up. And so sometimes it's a tight squeeze into those suits. And so helps with donning and doffing of the suit.
All right. Well, you know they've got to like that if you actually get taller in space. Coming up in a few minutes, we will expand our live coverage with teams in Hawthorne, California, to help us walk through today's launch and ascent. And of course, we have been asking you to submit your social questions and hashtag Ask NASA. And we've got another question now for you, Wheels. So let's answer some of those that came in. Josh Ree asks, what would the astronauts do the last couple of hours before launch? Well, we're in the last couple of hours.
Absolutely. They're actually in their spacecraft about 2.5 hours before they launch. And so they're sitting sort of on their backs with their feet up. And you might try this at home. You could lay on the floor next to a chair or the sofa and put your legs up on the chair and sit like that for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And so so that's the that's sort of the position they're in right now. And so it can be get a little uncomfortable, and so but you can move around just a little bit to kind of now other spacecraft that I flew with the Soyuz, there was kind of a tight squeeze for me, and so your knees are up closer to your chest in that one. So and the space shuttle was very similar to the SpaceX Dragon capsule.
There's only a certain amount of time that any individual, an astronaut included, excellent physical shape, can stay on their back. It's not an issue with the spacecraft loading, because they load their propellant with the astronauts in there. So
that's
shorter
true.
Time.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. Now, it is important. We got to integrate the crew to the spacecraft as well. So, and those things take time, and they come in sequence as well, to include the suit leak checks and things like that. So.
Well, before they got on board the spacecraft, as you see them here, one of the things, one of the first things that Crew 12 did was design their mission patch. Take a look at this. The enchanted forest that you see kind of encircling in the middle there, that reflects the crew's shared love of four bright stars. I'm sorry, the shared love of nature, shared love of nature, and their optimism for the future. Then you also see four bright stars throughout the patch there. Those light the night sky, one for each crew member, with the smaller stars nearby around them representing the children who inspire them. At the center, you see the dragon breathing fire, symbolizing the energy and determination driving this crew's journey to the International Space Station. And along the curve of the Earth below, you see flags of the crew's home nations that remind us that this mission is built on strong global partnerships, and of course they have the support to carry them with the Roman numeral 12 bottom. It's a nice patch.
I love it. The symbology is incredible, and actually, as Jack and I think it was Andre and Sophie had mentioned, they came from small towns, and so they were. Nature was their playground, so the dark skies and the beautiful stars at night that allowed them to dream about things that could be.
great to see that inspiration and that passion molded into the patch. And, you know, they all seem to have a little bit of artistic flair to them with the musical instruments and whatnot. So it is a beautiful thing to see. As they are settled into their seats there, every crew member, we talked about this earlier, who goes up into orbit, takes some reminders of home with them. Here's what Crew 12 is taking up. Jessica Meir is bringing her piccolo, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
That should be interesting. She teased that maybe we might get to hear that in some form or fashion, so we'll have to stay tuned for that. Of course, she's also bringing different mementos from different institutions, organizations, universities. She's bringing a small stuffed rabbit that belongs to her 3-year-old daughter. There are actually two of them. One will stay on Earth with her daughter, and then the other one will go up into space, and they will share photos back and forth during the mission with that rabbit, and that's precious. Jack Hathaway is bringing something that he's flown as a personal gift that he's going to give back when he gets back on Earth. Sophie Adno is bringing the mission patch of Claudie Hagnier, the first French woman astronaut who flew to space on August 17, 1996, aboard the Soyuz TM-24 mission. Hagnier inspired Adno and so many people in France to do what she wanted to do in order to honor her. And so that, of course, inspiring her as an astronaut. And then Andrei Fedyaev is bringing a small thing, like some gifts that he's going to take up into space, then bring back and give them to friends.
Absolutely. And you'll see the crew will reveal their zero-G indicator as well once they get to space. And so we'll leave that for the crew to tell us all about that when they release that zero-G indicator.
Looking forward to that. Every single crew since going all the way back to the very first Demo 2 mission in 2020 brought a zero-G gravity indicator. So, yes, we will await to see what this crew has in store for us.
On my Soyuz flight, Fyodor Yurchikhin, my commander, brought a little dog that he was given back in elementary school.
Not a real dog.
Not a real dog, but just a little zero-G indicator that we had, little stuffed dog. And his teacher said to take this everywhere you go and share your journey.
His teacher from his earlier
elementary school years.
How about that? That's beautiful. Well, the Dragon spacecraft Freedom will take Crew 12 to space today. And when it does so, it will be the Freedom's fifth space flight, a veteran spacecraft with a lot of miles already on the clock. First flight, Crew 4. Since then, Freedom has flown a mix of NASA and private missions, including a couple of Axiom flights. It's already spent more than a year in space. The name Freedom, you can see there, was chosen by Crew 4 Commander Chell Lindgren on the left there. The nod to the basic human right and what's possible when curiosity, innovation, and the human spirit are left unrestricted. There is Freedom docked to the International Space Station. Beautiful sight. Here it is on the ground, waiting its ride into space. If we launch at 5:15 and 55 seconds a.m., it'll take roughly a day and about 10 hours to get to the space station.
Absolutely. It'll take about 8 or 9 minutes to get to space from the launch pad. Quick ride to space. And then we'll do the phasing to dock with the International Space Station.
And welcome to those of you joining us for our live coverage of NASA and SpaceX's Crew 12 mission to the International Space Station. We are now inside the final hour, or roughly, we're getting close to the final hour before liftoff, currently at T-minus 1 hour and 10 minutes, as we move into this critical phase of the countdown. In a moment, we will be joined by our colleagues at SpaceX. Going to reintroduce you to all of you out there watching. I'm NASA's Daryl Nail, and for the past hour, I've been joined by this man, Wheels, NASA astronaut and U.S. Army Colonel Doug Wheelock, a veteran space flyer who's been helping break down today's mission and answering your questions, and you've been doing a great job at it. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate that, Daryl. So exciting to be here with you.
Sharing your knowledge and your information and your experience has been a tremendous value to this broadcast. Crew 12 is launching from Space Launch Complex 40 at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. We're lifting off at 5:15 and 55 seconds a.m. Eastern Time. And as we mentioned, it's just a little more than an hour away. Once this crew arrives at the station, they will join Expedition 74. Now here's a look back at how this morning unfolded as the crew prepared for launch. The day began inside the historic astronaut crew quarters, where SpaceX teams helped each crew member into their custom pressure suits. Before heading out, the crew paused for a final pre-launch tradition right here, gathering around the table for a card game, a way to set the tone and leave any bad luck behind. Then it was time to step outside. There they are, walking the path walked by every NASA astronaut since Apollo 7 in 1968. A short time later, the crew climbed into their Teslas after saying goodbye to their families and loved ones. And in pairs, after they arrived to the launch pad, they checked out their rocket, got their close-up look at the Falcon 9. There you see them walking right next to the rocket, which is right there before they climbed the launch tower. And then in pairs, they walked across the crew access arm. First the commander and pilot, then the two mission specialists. And we saw them climb into their Dragon, get into their seats for flight. As you see here, they articulated their seats, basically rotating them into position. They did their suit leak checks and their comm checks as the countdown continued. And now we are back live, watching them live, both on the pad and inside the spacecraft, strapped inside Dragon Freedom, waiting on the next major milestone on the road to liftoff. It's been a good journey, and we've been tracking it the whole way.
Absolutely, yep. And now things are going to start to pick up once we get inside of an hour. You'll hear some things on the loops that will be sequence tests that go on as we get ready for launch as well.
And with that hatch closed, I imagine there's a very specific type of quiet inside that capsule, inside the spacecraft.
There's a little bit of nervousness that goes on. I'm sure that Jack will provide some dad jokes to sort of light the atmosphere a little bit. But yeah, it's game time. So it's the crew is getting into the zone. They're probably talking about maybe reviewing in their mind their initial steps, and so they're ready to go.
All right, speaking of ready to go, at this time we're expanding our coverage to include our partners at SpaceX. So let's welcome in our team joining us live from Hawthorne, California. Good morning, or in your case, good evening. Are you still on yesterday? Yeah, I think so. Oh, no, it looks like you're with us. You're today.
Air Production and Engineering Manager here at SpaceX. And I'm Sandra Jones with NASA Communications. We are excited to be joining you once again from Hawthorne. It is always a pleasure to be here, especially today as we count down to liftoff of Crew 12 just over an hour from now. As the name suggests, Crew 12 is our 12th operational mission with SpaceX, flying astronauts for long-duration missions to the International Space Station, and the 13th as a part of NASA's Commercial Crew Program with SpaceX. Today's crew will fly aboard Dragon Freedom, which first supported NASA's Crew 4 mission in 2022, and since then has flown several missions, including Axiom missions 2 and 3 and NASA's Crew 9. Crew 12 will be Dragon's 17th visit to the space station with crew on board and its 20th human spaceflight mission overall. So let's meet today's crew. In the commander seat is NASA astronaut Jessica Meir, who spent a total of 205 days in space on her first space flight back in 2019 and was part of the first all-female spacewalks. She holds a biology degree from Brown University. Next to Meir is pilot Jack Hathaway, making his very first flight to space. The Connecticut native earned bachelor's degrees in physics and history from the U.S. Naval Academy, and he has more than 2,500 flight hours in 30 types of aircraft and has flown 39 combat missions during several military operations.
Serving as a mission specialist is Sophie Adenau, representing the European Space Agency, or ESA. The French native studied engineering and specialized in spacecraft and aircraft flight dynamics during undergraduate work in France and received her master's degree from MIT. This will also be her first trip to space. And rounding out this crew is Roscosmos cosmonaut and mission specialist Andrei Fedyaev. As a major in the Russian Air Force, he's logged more than 500 hours in Russian aircraft. Back in 2023, he launched as a mission specialist as part of Crew 6, where he spent nearly 186 days aboard the International Space Station. Once on board the International Space Station, Crew 12 will become members of Expedition 74 and add to the milestone of over 25 years of humans living and working aboard the International Space Station. Crew 12 will contribute to hundreds of experiments aimed at advancing research and technology for missions to the Moon and Mars and to benefit humanity back on Earth. This research includes using the unique microgravity environment of the space station to study pneumonia-causing bacteria and how they can lead to long-term damage in the heart. This research could lead to new methods to manage cardiovascular health and infectious diseases here on Earth. So we're looking forward to hearing more about the research that continues to take place on Space Station later in today's broadcast and how it helps NASA prepare to return to the Moon and go on to Mars. But for now, let's check in with another member here in Hawthorne, Kate Tice. Kate, how's it going?
Hey, Sandra. Thank you. And good morning to all of you watching. I'm Kate Tice, Senior Quality Systems Engineering Manager here at SpaceX. And I'm excited to be joining you again today from right outside Mission Control in Hawthorne, as you can see just over my shoulder. Now, as we continue to count down to launch, we'll walk you through what to watch for as the clock nears T0. It continues to be a smooth countdown, and we're looking good for an on-time liftoff at 5:15 a.m. Eastern Time from Space Launch Complex 40 in Florida. Coming up here at T-45 minutes, we'll be listening for the team to report their readiness for propellant load with a final go, no-go pull. Now, here on the ground in Hawthorne, Mission Control is staffed around the clock to monitor Dragon and the mission all the way from launch to docking. The same teams that you see right there on your screen today will hand off the mission from shift to shift, maintaining continuous awareness from liftoff through rendezvous and docking with the space station and all the way through splashdown when the crew returns home. Inside that room there, Mission Control, there are six key positions on console today, and each of them are focused on a specific aspect of the mission. The mission director is the person leading the room. They coordinate the team and make real-time decisions to ensure mission success. The mission director, who you will hear referred to as MD when we talk to them on the nets. All right, so that the comms there, I'll get to that person in just a moment. The mission director who I was referring to, that individual also supports the Falcon launch director, or LD, during the countdown. Now, the voice that you just heard is our crew operations and resources engineer, you see there on your screen. Today, we refer to that person as CORE throughout the broadcast. Our CORE today is Mary Cooper, and she will be the primary voice talking to the crew while they are on board Dragon on the way to space. Now, the remaining operators are focused on Dragon systems, including avionics, guidance and control, software, propulsion, life support, and coordination with ground support teams. And across the country, our Falcon 9 and Dragon teams, along with key NASA launch personnel, are stationed in the Launch and Landing Control Center at SpaceX's Hangar X in Florida. Now, as we move inside the final hour, teams across both rooms will be reviewing data from their final checkouts in preparation for retraction of the crew access arm and the start of propellant loading. But the teams in Hawthorne and Cape Canaveral aren't the only ones supporting today's mission.
That's right, Kate. NASA has its own team at the Johnson Space Center in Mission Control in Houston, Texas, who will be checking in with us as we progress toward today's launch. This is where NASA's Anna Schneider is located, who will share the latest updates from Mission Control as they have been busy preparing the International Space Station for Dragon's arrival. The team over in Houston recently gave their go for launch, confirming the station and its systems are ready to receive the Dragon, Freedom, and the new crew. Following liftoff, today's flight to the International Space Station will take about 34 hours, with Dragon flying autonomously the entire way. And we will continue to hear communications from the ground to the crew inside Dragon Freedom as they step through those procedures. We're now less than an hour away from today's launch, but tomorrow we'll be looking ahead towards docking, which is targeted for February 14th at 3:15 p.m. Eastern to the Zenith Port of Harmony. And just like an autopilot on a commercial aircraft, the crew always has the ability to take manual control of the spacecraft if needed. Right. We are at T-minus 58 minutes and 42 seconds and counting. And launching a rocket takes a considerable amount of teamwork. During launch, SpaceX is monitoring the health of the vehicles from here in Hawthorne and Kennedy, and our recovery team is porting out at sea. NASA teams at Johnson Space Center in Texas are monitoring crew and mission rules. Once Dragon makes it to orbit, SpaceX and Johnson will work in tandem during Dragon's approach to station. Johnson then takes the lead for station operations. Let's check in with NASA's Anna Schneider at the Johnson Space Center to see how things are shaping up in Mission Control Houston. How's it going, Anna?
Hey, thanks, Jesse, and welcome back to Mission Control Houston inside the International Space Station Flight Control Room at the Johnson Space Center here in Houston, Texas. We are, of course, here in the hub of human spaceflight for NASA. Currently on console is the Orbit One team of flight controllers being led by Flight Director Garrett Hain, and this team of flight directors recently pulled a go for launch, which means the International Space Station is ready for Crew 12 to lift off and begin their journey to the orbiting laboratory. At the time of launch, the space station will be traveling 260 miles over the South Pacific east of New Zealand. Docking is targeted for tomorrow at 2:15 p.m. Central, 3:15 p.m. Eastern, and in the home stretch of the rendezvous tomorrow, NASA and SpaceX flight controllers will enter into integrated operations. During integrated operations, both flight control teams will conduct a series of go-no-go pulls for Dragon Freedom as it closes in to docking to the Zenith or space-facing port of the station's Harmony module. Rotational missions like Crew 12 help NASA to continue to maximize the important research and technology demonstrations made possible only in the International Space Station's unique microgravity environment. The International Space Station is critical for NASA as it prepares for future low-Earth orbit destinations. Working alongside U.S. commercial partners, NASA is enabling the development of sustainable destinations that will maintain America's presence in low-Earth orbit and continue to support groundbreaking research. The space station also helps us to better understand and overcome the challenges of long-duration spaceflight, which will be necessary for a long-term presence on the Moon and crewed missions to deeper into the solar system, including Mars. That's all for me here in Mission Control Houston for now, and with that, we will hand it back to the Kennedy Space Center with Steve Seiseloff.
Good morning, everyone. I am here with NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman. And Mr. Administrator, you've talked a lot about low Earth orbit research and its value, both in terms of research and in terms of crew training. What do you see for the International Space Station during your term?
First of all, I mean, the International Space Station is such a success story already. I mean, international cooperation it took to build it, you're looking at maybe one of the greatest engineering accomplishments in modern history. I mean, 25 years of cooperation up there. I think the goal right now is to maximize the remaining life on it to the greatest extent possible. So, you know, as our astronauts prepare to go up and undertake the mission that Crew 12 is launching on right now, the idea is to get the highest potential science and research up there to unlock and ignite an orbital economy so that someday we have lots of, you know, commercially operated space stations in low Earth orbit, and also to demonstrate a lot of the technology that we intend to use on lunar missions and a lunar base in the future. A great example would be it's a great testing ground for future lunar EVA suits to be able to exercise that on the space station. So we're going to make an awful lot of use of the station over its remaining life. We're going to keep our crews extremely busy up there.
And also, we're preparing this morning to launch Crew 12 to low Earth orbit to the International Space Station, and then going to send another crew around the moon in just a few weeks. Space agencies don't typically do those kind of missions right on top of each other. What does that say about NASA?
I'd say we're just getting started right now, but you're certainly seeing American space capabilities being showcased. We were able to bring Crew 11 home early while pulling forward Crew 12, which is getting ready to launch in less than an hour right now, while we have crews out there testing for Artemis 2. We're doing a series of kind of mini wet dress rehearsal tests today, make sure we give that vehicle the highest probability of success to get off the pad in early March. What a great problem to have, multiple crew-rated vehicles out on the pad right now. I hope this becomes more commonplace to such an extent that maybe in the years ahead, having two vehicles ready to go to space with astronauts seems like an easy day.
Excellent. Well, there you have it. Words from our new NASA Administrator, Jared Isaacman. We're going to go back to Daryl Nail.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen, and Administrator Isaacman. Great to hear from him as we see this shot orbiting Launch Complex 40. This is something that our administrator was zipping around in his own F5 just recently with an employee, and we're going to have an interview with that employee coming up later in the broadcast. But in the meantime, here's a closer look at the mission and what Crew 12 will have to look forward to during their long-duration stay aboard the International Space Station.
Falcon 9 is the first orbital-class rocket capable of reflight. Together, Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy have completed more than 600 launches. And we can't have reflights without landings. Today's mission will actually be our first landing at Landing Zone 40 in Cape Canaveral, which is our newest recovery site. While today's booster is on its second trip to space after most recently supporting a SpaceX Starlink mission, we're working towards qualifying our fleet of Falcon boosters and fairings to support 40 missions each. Reusability allows SpaceX to refly the most expensive parts of the rocket, which in turn drives down the cost of space access. Our current Falcon 9 flight leader has flown 32 flights, and across the fleet, we've completed more than 500 reflights. Another innovation SpaceX has been working on is the intravehicular spacesuits, or IVA suits, that astronauts wear during Dragon missions. The new IVA suit debuted during the Crew 11 mission last year, worn by NASA astronaut Mike Fink. The design incorporates changes developed for the Polaris Dawn mission's extravehicular activity, or EVA suit, and will ultimately help us scale suit production and aid our ability to manufacture IVA suits in the numbers needed to make life multiplanetary.
And for today's mission, all astronauts on board are wearing the new IVA suit. And the Crew 12 astronauts are staying comfortable in their spacesuits right now as they prepare for liftoff, now in 48 minutes from now. They'll remain suited up through the launch portion of today and during dynamic events. But once on orbit, they will be able to get out of their spacesuits and get comfortable for the remainder of the ride uphill before getting suited back up shortly before docking to the International Space Station for their science and research mission as a key stepping stone to NASA's Moon to Mars efforts.
SpaceX shares NASA's goal of returning to the moon, approaching the mission with the same determination that returned human spaceflight capability to America under NASA's Commercial Crew program and building a self-growing city on the moon in the next 10 years. To unlock that future, SpaceX's HLS team has completed dozens of milestones tied to developing systems, infrastructure, and operations needed to safely land astronauts on the moon. While many of SpaceX's remaining HLS milestones are tied to flight tests, such as ship-to-ship propellant transfer demonstration, SpaceX is fabricating a flight-capable Starship HLS cabin that will demonstrate a high design maturity for the system supporting humans on the moon and provide a highly realistic training experience for future astronauts.
With NASA's Artemis campaign, we are exploring the moon for scientific discovery, technology, advancement, and to learn how to live and work on another world as we prepare for sending humans to missions to Mars. The upcoming Artemis II mission will carry NASA astronauts Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christina Cook, and CSA astronaut Jeremy Hansen on a 10-day test flight mission around the moon to prove out key systems on the Orion spacecraft ahead of a future lunar landing mission. By leveraging NASA's unique and historic experience in lunar exploration, paired with the speed and innovation of industry, the HLS program is providing the key lunar landing capability for Artemis to achieve a long-term human presence in deep space. NASA is working with SpaceX to develop the company's Starship human landing system for future missions.
Cargo variants of the Starship lander will be capable of landing unparalleled capacity directly on the surface, including large pieces of equipment and infrastructure. SpaceX was founded to make life multiplanetary, and Starship has been designed from the very beginning to enable the exploration of other worlds. With it, and alongside NASA, we look forward to inspiring all of humanity as that first permanent foothold is placed among the stars.
It continues. And we did just hear that call out that there is a go for a crew arm to retract, so we are going to be able to actually see that movement here on our screen here shortly. So as you're watching that on your screen, we also got a call out for propellant load. This is a milestone that we're going to be following along throughout the next 44 minutes or so before launch, and we'll keep you apprised of updates as that moves on. And it continues to be an exciting time in human spaceflight, both for lunar missions and, of course, a little closer to home. Speaking of, let's get back to today's mission to the International Space Station and check in with Kate on the status of the countdown. Kate?
Thanks, Sandra. So we're now just about 44 minutes from launch. And as we heard moments ago, the SpaceX launch director has polled the team for their readiness on both propellant loading and launch. This is basically the final roll call for the teams, both the NASA teams checked in, the launch director, the mission director. Each team confirmed that they are healthy and ready to proceed. Now, that poll was performed electronically, so we didn't actually hear any call-outs from each person, but it was all done electronically. Now, like we mentioned earlier, Falcon 9 and Dragon teams, along with key NASA launch personnel, are stationed at the Launch and Landing Control Center at SpaceX's Hangar X in Florida. The launch director also checked in with the good news there, letting us know that that crew access arm is now stowed into the launch position. That is one of the final physical changes that we'll see to the pad. Now, the launch director also checked in with the Dragon mission director, who we hear referred to as MD, as well as the NASA operations manager, to confirm alignment across SpaceX and NASA before moving forward. So, right now, the crew continues to be seated comfortably inside Dragon. That crew access arm has been stowed. Next up will be arming the launch escape system to prepare the spacecraft's emergency systems before departure. Once the launch director gives what we saw before was the launch director giving the go-ahead for that crew access arm. And so up next is
Dragon,
it will
SpaceX,
be that.
You have a go for step 6.3, closed visors and arm launch escape system.
Dragon copies. We're ready to close visors and arm the launch escape system.
All right. Words there letting us know that the crew is now putting their visors down, as we can see them doing. That's important as we move into more dynamic operations for the vehicles at the pad, and the launch escape system will be armed. After
SpaceX Dragon, visors are closed. We're ready to send the command.
SpaceX copies. You have a go to arm the launch escape system.
Arming the launch escape system.
Copy, go.
Is an important step that we execute prior to starting propellant loading. That will begin in less than 10 minutes. That'll happen at T-minus 35 minutes here in about 6 minutes from now. So in the meantime, let's check back in with our friends at Kennedy. Daryl and Doug, how is it over in Florida?
Beautiful here in Florida, Kate, and thank you. I'm here with Doug Wheelock, NASA astronaut, a.k.a. Wheels. He's been giving us the commentary, and we just heard a call out following up on what Kate was saying, that the launch escape system is armed. This is a very dynamic time as we prepare to load propellants aboard Falcon 9.
Absolutely. This is a critical time in the flow, of course, and we want to make sure that launch escape system is armed so the crew has a way to swiftly get off the pad if need be.
And of course, you train for this, Wheels. This is not something that is, just an easy ride. I mean, if that thing
right.
were to need to pull off the top of that rocket, it's going to come up there with a lot of G-force.
You had mentioned, like, what is the time when the crew really starts to tighten up and when that access arm swings away and it starts to get real? It's game time now, and so things get a little less jovial inside, and people have their game face on, and they're getting ready to march through these sequences.
Talk us through kind of what you feel and experience in this moment. In your experience, you launched on STS-120, a space shuttle, and then you also launched on a Soyuz from Kazakhstan. What's the experience? What's the mood inside the capsule, inside the spacecraft?
You could begin to see and hear and feel vibrations in the vehicle as valves open and close. For tanking and things like that, gimbal checks and various pressurization of the Dracos on the side of the on the side of the spacecraft as
right
well.
There close to your head.
Right,
you can hear those, yeah.
You could hear those things. You could feel vibration. And so you could feel sort of the spacecraft is coming to life. You know, the rocket is coming to life. And so it gets real pretty quick.
Our next major milestone that we're awaiting is the loading of propellant, and this is happening at T-minus 35 minutes. This is a standard for SpaceX. This is when they begin a automated sequence that will tank both the first stage and the second stage with propellants. They use RP-1 as their main fuel, and of course liquid oxygen as the oxidizer. And once that starts kicking into gear, that sets forth that automated system that takes us all the way to T0.
I see. You'll be able to see these are highly chilled propellants that will go into the rocket, and so you'll begin to see clouds forming around the rocket as it fills with fuel and propellant and oxidizer. And you'll be able to kind of tell how full the rocket is getting as it kind of marches up the stack. And so then you'll eventually see venting as well, and that's perfectly normal. That's the Dragon and the rocket, Falcon 9 rocket coming to life.
And we can already see some of the venting of from the liquid oxygen tanks that are on the ground there as the wind swirls around. We've got great weather for launch today, 95% go from our launch weather officer, Brian Sizek, who is handling the mission weatherwise for today. And you're also looking at what is the new home pad is needed for something else, and there's a conflict. They could go back to pad 39A, where commercial crew started. There's some of the noises you were talking about,
sure.
And so they're saying, hey, you know, beware. But just to finish the thought there, 39A, it'll serve as now a backup launch pad for commercial crew.
Absolutely. It's very exciting to bring these new pads to life, and we're getting very busy, and Administrator Isaacman had said it's a great time to be in the space business.
That's
so
right.
Really wonderful to be here on the Space Coast and see these pads coming to life.
Crew 12 strapped inside Dragon Freedom, currently getting ready for its fifth flight, following Crew 4, Axiom 2 and 3, and Crew 9. We'll be riding on booster Falcon 9, of course, 1101-2, its second flight. Previously, this booster flew on a Starlink flight not too long ago, Doug, and this is something that SpaceX, you know, champions well in their program, and that's the reuse of their boosters.
It's so wonderful to see the reuse of these things. I heard speak of they're trying to certify for 40 launches on these reusable pieces, which is just amazing. It just really, the cost savings and also the reusability and just the time savings as well to turn around flights. It's really wonderful advancement in our technology.
And quick turnaround as well, as that mission was launched in January of this year. So just on the 4th of January, you know, just a month and a half ago.
That's a pretty quick turnaround.
That's pretty fast.
Absolutely.
We are counting down. It feels like pretty quickly down to the kickoff of the propellant load, T-minus 35 minutes. We're just a few seconds away from listening in to this critical milestone on our countdown to liftoff at 5:15 and 55 seconds a.m. Eastern Time.
The crew right now, heard the propellant load is starting. The crew is reviewing their procedures probably in their mind, their steps. We go through boundaries on ascent, and so they're no doubt reviewing those things in their mind as well to prepare for what they should hear, what they should feel, and then their actions if they don't see or hear those things.
Commander, that's right, Commander Jessica Meir walking her crew through those moments, no doubt, as she leads them on their mission to the International Space Station. Of course, she has a special place in our hearts as she was a co-commentator in your current role for Crew 7 and Crew 10. She was part of the launch broadcasts, and so she did those before she went up on the SpaceX Falcon 9 and Dragon. So she got to see all of this many times. Of course, she's well-trained, but she also saw it from how it looks to the audience out there in the world.
And she set the bar way too high for me, Daryl. So
you're doing a fantastic job, Wheels. I couldn't be more happy to have you with me here today as we count down and head back out to Hawthorne, California.
Thanks, Daryl. Now, as we heard the call out earlier, propellant loading of both RP-1, that's that rocket-grade kerosene, as well as super-chilled liquid oxygen, loading for those began at T-minus 35 minutes. Everything is looking good for both Falcon 9 and Dragon at the moment. Teams are working, no major issues. The range is green, and weather is looking awesome. Our percent of violation of launch requirements for the weather, those are the rules that we have to follow in order to make sure that we're able to launch. We only have a 5% chance of violating those rules, so that's pretty good for Florida. Now, soon we'll hear the SpaceX launch director inform the crew when loading of cryogenic helium will begin. We'll first see that occur on stage one at T-minus 30 minutes, and then stage two will begin its cryogenic helium loading about 4 minutes later. Now, stage two RP loading should wrap up at T-minus 20 minutes and 30 seconds, and then as we approach T-minus 16 minutes and 30 seconds, we'll hear the call out that stage two liquid oxygen loading has begun. We do that as late as possible in the count to make sure that that liquid oxygen can stay as cold as possible. Now, by the time Falcon 9 is ready for liftoff, we will have loaded nearly 1 million pounds of propellant onto the vehicle. That's roughly the weight of a large commercial airliner at maximum takeoff weight. Today's mission has an instantaneous launch window, which means that there
Dragon will target one of several Pacific splashdown zones supported by SpaceX. Those splashdown locations are off the coast of California near Los Angeles, Oceanside, and San Diego. The recovery vessel Shannon is staged out of Long Beach and ready to support operations when Dragon returns. Having multiple recovery sites gives teams flexibility, increasing the chances of landing on the planned day and reducing the likelihood of waving off a return due to weather. So that's a look way into the future when our crew returns back to Earth, but let's rewind a bit to when we had a chance to hear Crew 12's thoughts about the spacecraft taking them up to space today.
Since Administrator Jared Isaacman took over at NASA, he's been giving special flights to employees who stand out in their area and are exceptional in many ways in his own F-5. And so now joining us is one of those employees. He's with NASA's Steven Seisloff, who is with the Ground and Missions Operation Manager, Daniel Forrestal. Steven.
Hey, thank you, Daryl. We are here with Daniel Forrestal. He is the manager for ground operations and mission operations for Commercial Crew Program. And Daniel, one of your tasks, this is the second crewed launch from Space Launch Complex 40 over on Cape Side. One of your tasks was getting Space Launch 40 ready for human-rated missions. What went into that work?
That's right. So SpaceX has been launching rockets from 40 for years before we man-rated it. And so we had to do a lot of hardware upgrades. We had to add a crew access tower, a crew access arm. We had to make sure we had emergency egress systems in place for the crew. And then not just the technical, we had to make sure that the operations were good. It may look similar launching from 39A and 40, but we had to make sure that the operations were seamless and that we had everything ready to go to get the crew up and down the tower and get the launch off.
Excellent. And while you were doing that for Crew 12, you also had to keep in the back of your mind that Artemis 2 was making its mission preparations for its flight around the moon. You share resources in different ways. What went into some of the work to deconflict the preparations for those and make sure everybody had the resources that they need?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that we've been working on since really the end of last summer when we saw that their launch windows were lining up together. It's really unprecedented. We had never had a time with two manned rockets ready to go at the same time. And so just making sure that resources from propellants to people who support both launches to the astronaut crew quarters where we got the crews in quarantine together potentially. We had to take it step by step, make sure that we were ready to go. And we had to run different iterations depending on who went first and in what order and what timeline and how much time separated the two missions. It was a good problem to have. It was a complex problem, but one I hope that we get to do a lot here as the spaceport gets busier in the future.
Definitely, definitely. And as Daryl was suggesting, you were one of the first NASA employees to take a reward flight, a reward for the service that you put in, the expertise that you provide. And you flew with Jared Isaacman, the NASA administrator, in his supersonic F-5s. What was that day like? I'd imagine you got a few jealous emails.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible. I've gotten lucky enough to do a lot of really cool things here at NASA. Flying in a fighter jet was never on my list. But, man, seeing Kennedy Space Center from the air was just a magnificent sight. And then they took us out over the water, and we did acrobatics, and it was like a souped-up roller coaster out there. And so it was just a an incredible experience, was hanging on the whole time, really honored to be able to be selected to do that, and hopefully something that a lot of people get the chance to do here in the future.
Excellent. Well, congratulations for that. We're going to head back to Daryl and the countdown for Crew 12.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. And what Daniel didn't say, but he told me, is it took him a day to reorient because his vestibular system, right? You know this as a pilot.
Absolutely, yeah. It is like a roller coaster. it can take a little bit to get your legs back underneath you.
Absolutely. Well, Crew 12 is getting ready to jump in full strength and dive into a full slate of science aboard the International Space Station. Here are just a few of the investigations they'll be working on. This is a compact system designed to produce intravenous saline from drinkable water. The goal, on-demand IV fluids for medical care, a critical capability for future long-duration missions far from Earth. And then there's VEG-06 that you see here. This research examines how spaceflight affects the relationship between plants and nitrogen-fixing microbes. What scientists learn here could help improve food production, not just in orbit, but also for future missions to the Moon and eventually Mars. And speaking of Moon missions, over at nearby Launch Complex 39B, well, there it is. Four astronauts are expected to lift off on NASA's Space Launch System rocket for a 10-day journey around the Moon. Launch for Artemis II is currently scheduled for no earlier than March 6th. Launch window opens at 8:29 p.m. Eastern Time. Actually, we know this to be in early March. That date, of course, will depend on what happens with the latest wet dress. Last month, the Artemis II rocket made a major move, rolling from the Vehicle Assembly Building to Pad 39B for the first time. The 4.2-mile journey to the pad took about 12 hours as the Moon rocket inched into position. There you see the firing room one and the team there conducting the operation. A few weeks ago, the teams conducted a wet dress rehearsal, a full practice countdown that loads the rocket with real cryogenic propellant, more than 700,000 gallons in all. The countdown moved through most of terminal count until a hydrogen leak around the five-minute mark triggered a cutoff. The vehicle was safely detanked. The seals were replaced, those responsible for the leak, and another wet dress rehearsal will be scheduled soon. Orion will carry Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, and Christina Cook, along with Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen, around the Moon and back. And Wheels, you are intimately involved with where this Artemis program is going, of course, and that is landing on the Moon, as we're looking live at the rocket that will take those astronauts around the Moon and in upcoming missions land on the Moon. As we mentioned at the top of the broadcast, you're helping train next generation of astronauts to be able to land on the Moon. So what is going on? Talk about that challenge and where we're at right now.
So, of course, our mission back to the Moon is going to require – we went back to the Apollo archives, and we dug out – we talked to several Apollo astronauts, Charlie Duke and Harrison Schmitt.
Wow.
The biggest help to our team so far, just trying to replicate what they did and build on that. So we're learning how to fly helicopters, and so we can do vertical landings and takeoffs. And so to kind of put that into the muscle memory of our pilots, we're also going to have motion-based simulation that will be lunar simulation. And then you'll be seeing coming on the near horizon a lunar lander training vehicle as well, a vehicle that can replicate lunar dynamics in flight. So we're very excited about our training strategy, getting back to the moon.
I love and I'm jealous that you got to tap into the Apollo guys.
Absolutely.
In order to help this. And there's a beautiful shot of the moon from our fine production crew here at the Kennedy Space Center that is manning all these beautiful views that you're looking at today, including there at Launch Complex 39B. For more Artemis II updates, just scan the QR code that is now at the bottom of your screen. It's going to take you to a website, which is nasa.gov/Artemis. You'll have all the updates and information that you need to see to understand the mission and follow it closely. All right, right now, let's send it back to SpaceX in Hawthorne, California for the latest update there.
Thanks, Daryl. And we did just hear that call out that RP-1 on stage 2 is completely full. So great news. You're continuing to see some clouds of condensation build up around the rocket there. That is completely expected and normal as part of this fueling process. The Falcon 9 rocket supporting today's Crew 12 launch that you see on your screen right there is a two-stage rocket designed for the reliable and safe transportation of satellites, cargo, and people, which is the goal of NASA's Commercial Crew Program. At the top of Falcon 9 today, the crew is sitting inside Dragon Freedom.
There are currently 5 Dragon spacecraft supporting human spaceflight missions. That's Endeavour, Resilience, Endurance, Freedom, and our 5th and final Dragon, Grace, which launched the Axiom Mission 4 in 2025. Combined with safety as the highest priority, Dragon is capable of carrying up to 7 passengers to and from Earth orbit.
And Dragon has 16 Draco thrusters that can be used in space to help navigate the spacecraft to its destination, each providing 90 pounds of force. That doesn't include the 8 Super Draco thrusters used for an abort, which are no longer active once the crew is in orbit.
To date, Dragon has been to orbit 55 times, including 49 trips to the International Space Station, both cargo and crew missions, and has completed 19 human spaceflight missions overall. Dragon is the first private spacecraft to take humans to the orbiting lab, having flown 300,000 pounds of cargo and more than 1,000 experiments to space, as well as 74 crew members representing 20 countries. A versatile Dragon spacecraft can autonomously dock with the International Space Station when outfitted with a docking adapter, which is one of 3 Dragon configurations and how it's currently configured for today's flight.
Right now, Dragon is Falcon 9's, right below Dragon is Falcon 9's second stage, which houses a single Merlin vacuum engine or MVAC engine. And then below the second stage is the black carbon fiber interstage, and inside of that is where the MVAC engine is located. The interstage connects the 2 stages and houses a center pusher that allows the first and second stage to separate during flight. Below that, we have the first stage, or booster, which when fully loaded holds about 1 million pounds of liquid oxygen and RP-1. The first stage
Dragon,
makes up
SpaceX
the...
For update, Falcon 9, Dragon, and weather remain go. We're tracking no holds against launch today.
Dragon copy, that's great news.
And you just heard it there, a call to the crew inside Dragon Freedom that everything continues to progress well and look good for launch today, now 17 minutes and 19 seconds away. Now, the first stage makes up the bottom two-thirds of the vehicle and has 9 Merlin M1D engines at the bottom, which generate more than 1.7 million pounds of thrust.
To reach orbit, the vehicle needs to go fast, hitting an orbital velocity of about 28,000 kilometers per hour just to keep from falling back to Earth. Now, that's fast enough to lap the Earth in about 90 minutes. About 2.5 minutes into flight, the first stage will separate and make its way back to Earth. Meanwhile, Dragon separates from the second stage and continues its roughly 34-hour journey to the space station. Now, it is early morning out there, but today's booster is heading back to our newest recovery. Our booster is heading back to our newest recovery site, our landing zone 40 at Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, which you can see the graphic there on the screen. It's highlighting the landing zone next to the pad there. This will be our first landing at this new site and the booster's second time returning back to Earth.
With T0 coming up in about 16 minutes, our teams are doing a series of system checks to ensure Dragon and Falcon 9 are ready. Let's check in with Kate on that countdown.
Thanks, Sandra. Overall, it's been a clean march to launch this morning, and we are still on track for an on-time launch. Now, the countdown is the framework that syncs all teams up, and we're monitoring lots of different factors as we get closer to liftoff. If everything goes as expected, we'll see Falcon take to the sky at 5:15 a.m. Eastern or 2:15 a.m. Pacific. And several minutes later, we'll see our very first Falcon 9 landing at LZ-40, our new landing zone located about 1,000 feet away from tonight's launch pad. Both Dragon and Falcon 9 continue to be healthy, and the teams continue to report no issues on either vehicle. Just moments there, we saw the crew sitting comfortably inside Dragon. Now, we wrapped up Stage 2 RP loading at T-minus 20 minutes, and Stage 2 liquid oxygen or lock loading began just a couple minutes ago at T-minus 16 minutes and 30 seconds. Earlier, we heard the call out that the launch escape system was armed. That system is designed to propel Dragon away from Falcon 9 in the unlikely event of an emergency during launch. It simply provides a path to safety for the crew. The Eastern Range, which is monitoring keep-out zones among other key flight requirements, also continues to report no issues and are go to support today's launch. As for the weather, the thing we always monitor for our launches, we're tracking a 5% chance of launch weather constraints, otherwise known as 95% good for our target liftoff time. So all in all, we are go for launch this morning. So let's toss it back over to Anna for a status update from Houston.
Hey, thanks, Kate. Back here in the International Space Station Flight Control Room at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, teams continue to work around the clock to monitor activities aboard the orbital outpost. Leading the team inside the room is Flight Director Garrett Hain and the NASA team here in Mission Control Houston, the SpaceX team in Hawthorne, California, and the astronauts aboard the International Space Station will track the autonomous docking of Dragon Freedom when they enter what is known as joint operations. This will happen when the spacecraft enters what is known as the approach ellipsoid. The approach ellipsoid is an invisible boundary stretching 4 by 2 by 2 kilometers around the space station that helps us monitor all arriving and departing spacecraft. It is essentially the neighborhood of the space station. Once docked, crew members in both Dragon and aboard the space station will pressurize the area between the Dragon hatch and the space station hatch, known as the vestibule. They will then perform a series of leak checks and then work to open the hatches on both the space station and the Dragon. Once the hatches are open, Crew 12 will float into the station to begin their long-duration stay. Following today's launch, we are tracking a targeted docking at approximately 2:15 p.m. Central, 3:15 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, January 14th. About an hour and a half after docking, we do anticipate that the hatches will be opened, and when they enter the orbital outpost, Crew 12 will be greeted by the rest of their Expedition 74 crew and will come together for a brief welcoming ceremony. For now, that's all from us here in Mission Control Houston as the anticipation continues to build for a launch in just under 15 minutes. How's it looking on the Space Coast, Daryl?
Looking great here. We're 95% go. We have beautiful clear skies and everything remains on track. No constraints as we enter the final 10 minutes. And Wheels, I want to turn to you now. As a former International Space Station commander, you know what it means to hand over a vehicle, a crew, and a station to the next generation of flyers. You also know that this crew, although they know the science they're working on, might end up working on some things they don't even know that they might encounter.
Sure, yeah. We are. I flew with Shannon Walker. Who I believe is listening today.
Love Shannon.
And Shannon's awesome. She's a brilliant PhD scientist. I am not. 6-month mission. And I was working my science, and Shannon came to me. She said, the potty's broken.
Ooh.
And so we had a couple seconds of mini panic attack. And then she said, if you fix the potty, I'll do all of your science for the rest of the day. I thought, that is such a deal.
Is that a trade-off?
It took me about 90 minutes, but we fixed that potty, and I found out that if you could fix the potty on a spaceship, you're guardian of the galaxy.
Wheels the plumber to the rescue. Absolutely. Really quickly, we're going to hear some final words from Jessica Amir, the commander, before they lift off. She's got these words composed.
Perfect. Yeah, she's amazing.
We're looking forward to hearing that, and so with just about 11 minutes to go, we'll send it back to Hawthorne for the final
Dragon
steps of today's countdown.
Crew displays are configured for launch.
Displays are configured for launch.
Copy. From the entire SpaceX team, it's been a pleasure working together. Good luck and Godspeed, Crew 12. Enjoy the ride.
In a few moments, we will leave the ground, but not the people who brought us here. This mission is the result of years of dedication, preparation, and trust. The teams of NASA and SpaceX, of Cosmos, ESA, JAXA, and CSA, Fort Worth stands on this pad with us. Every test, every checklist, every decision has led to this moment. Thank you for your tireless dedication and attention to detail. We launch not as individuals, as representatives of something much larger. We carry the flags of our countries and our space agencies, but most importantly, we carry humanity's intrinsic curiosity and desire to explore. Looking around me at the diversity of backgrounds and experiences with me in this cockpit and on the teams supporting us around the planet, it is clear that when we work together, we can accomplish extraordinary things. We stand on the shoulders of giants. This expression is trite, but true. Generations who dared to imagine beyond what they could touch, turned risk into knowledge, and who left behind a foundation strong enough to push further. These giants also include our families, our friends, and loved ones. You share the weight of this journey in ways that few ever see, and remind us that nobody reaches the horizon alone. When we look back at Earth from orbit, it will be your faces, your voices, and your sacrifices that travel with us. Crew 12 is ready. We are honored to represent our agencies, our nations, and the shared human desire to explore, to look up, ask what lies beyond, and to go together. We carry this responsibility with humility and with awe. Over to Jack.
In human spaceflight, passion isn't a coincidence. It's a choice. Whether you're welding hardware, programming software, or piloting a spacecraft, every one of us chose the difficult path that got us here today in this moment. Interacting with such a dedicated team is the best part of my job. I want to say a heartfelt thank you to the drive you bring to this program every single day. Over to Sophie.
Thanks, Jack. As a compliment to what my crewmate said, I wanted to say how important international cooperation is. As humanity, we can achieve great things when nations are working together. The International Space Station is a good example of a huge international achievement that just celebrated 25 years of continuous presence. We, as humanity, can be proud of achieving this together. I'll hand it over to Andre.
So, guys, engage. Поехали.
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 And some incredible, beautiful, awe-inspiring words from our Crew 12 crew inside of Dragon Freedom. Now approaching 7 minutes to lift off. That was wonderful to hear. It will be about a 9-minute ride to orbit, which is around the time of second stage cutoff today. Dragon and the second stage will continue to coast for a few minutes after that, prior to separation. And on the ride uphill, we will hear a variety of call-outs on performance as we approach the in-orbit portion into the final countdown. We'll also hear some call-outs for various abort zones for both the first and second stage. So we'll be sharing more about those abort zones as we get closer. But just a quick check-in with our fueling here. RP1 is at 100% full. LOX is at 92%. And that call out just right on time. Stage one is complete as well.
Yeah, the next milestone coming up will be at T-minus 5 minutes, and that'll be when Dragon will transition to configure for terminal counts. It's basically when Dragon will go on internal power. And we're coming up on that milestone in about 30 seconds from now. And then following that milestone, we will begin to get ready for Strongback or the Transporter Erector TE to recline away from the vehicle. And that'll begin just about 30 seconds after that T-minus 5-minute mark. And there's that call out for Dragon configuring for terminal count, as well as we heard Falcon 9 propellant tanks pressurizing for that strong back retraction. So with the TE retraction, the clamp arms, which you can see on your screen, it's just below the Dragon vehicle there at the top of the second stage. Those will begin. Now this process is going to begin. The clamp arms are going to open up. Once they are fully open, then the TE, which is that structure right next to the vehicle that you see on the right side, that will begin to move slowly away from the vehicle. And there you can see on your screen that those clamp arms are starting to open up now. So it will reach full recline by T-minus 3 minutes and 40 seconds, and the TE rolls Falcon 9 out to the pad, raises it vertical, and stays connected through the final seconds before liftoff. It provides fuel, power, telemetry, and command connections between ground systems and the vehicle.
And the next major milestone that we are awaiting this morning is that Stage 1 LOX load is complete. Propellant is loaded late in the countdown, which is intentional because that colder propellant is denser, and denser propellants mean more performance out of the same tanks. The colder it is, the more mass you can move. Before any of that propellant flows, though, the plumbing and engines are chilled down. This prevents thermal shock and boil off when the ultra-cold liquid starts moving. You may hear that referred to as engine chill. Loading wraps in two steps. The first stage finishes around T-minus 3 minutes. We'll hear that call out here any second. And the second stage finishes about a minute later. And you are seeing those white clouds of vapor on right on time, as expected. Stage one LOX load is complete. And you are seeing those white vapor clouds on your screen. This is normal and will continue as we do get closer to launch.
Yeah, and that call out was for... That call out was for stage one liquid oxygen loading completion, but stage two is still actually loading that cold liquid oxygen, which will wrap up at the T-minus 2 minute mark in just about 25 seconds from now. Once liquid oxygen is complete, that'll mean that there is 1 million pounds of propellant loaded on Falcon 9, and that includes RP1, a highly refined kerosene, and liquid oxygen, which is super chilled to over 300 degrees below zero. And great call out. Stage two liquid oxygen loading is complete. That means that Falcon 9 is fully loaded with propellants. Gas closeout has also begun just now. So we're isolating all the feed lines for the different gas systems from the Falcon 9 rocket. Those gases are strong back. And actually, if you listen closely, you can hear some of that venting from the vehicle. Obviously, rockets are very loud, and sound can impart pressure loads back on the rocket itself. A ton of water absorbs and prevents the sound from hitting the structure and reverberating back onto the vehicle. Great call out.
Dragon's flight computer is now in countdown and configured for launch. Now less than 1 minute away from the launch of Crew 12. Great call out there. Go for launch. At the time of launch, Space Station.
We are go for launch.
At the time of launch, Space Station will be flying 260 statute miles over the South Pacific Ocean east of New Zealand.
SpaceX is go. Crew is go. Let's watch as Falcon 9 takes Crew 12 out into space.
And liftoff, freedom flies, bound
one
for the
alpha.
International Space Station. 1.7 million pounds of thrust now propelling Falcon 9 and Crew 12. Vehicle is pitching downrange, and all nine Merlin vehicles have lit. We're getting good call-outs on the first stage performance and propulsion so far.
T-plus 30 seconds into the Crew 12 mission on board Dragon and Falcon 9. The vehicle is going to throttle down in preparation for max-Q. That's the largest structural load that the vehicle will see on ascent. Good call-outs there. There's that call-out for stage one throttle down. Pass through max-Q in a few seconds here. Great news. We have passed through max-Q.
That call-out that the vehicle is supersonic means it's traveling faster than the speed of sound. Stage one now throttling up.
One Bravo.
That call out for
one Bravo
means we're in the second and final abort mode for the first stage, continuing to get good performance. Crew is now already pulling over 2 Gs. Next up, we'll have a couple events happening in rapid success succession. First is that engine chill on the second stage and back engine, and then we'll have MECO, or main engine cutoff, where the 9 engines on the first stage will cut off ahead of the first and second stages separating from one another. Then the single Merlin vacuum engine on the second stage will ignite, continuing to carry Crew 12 to orbit while the first stage begins its journey back to Earth.
9 Merlin engines are starting to throttle down and standing by for MECO, or main engine cutoff. Is that call out? And in just a few seconds here, we will have MECO stage separation, stage 1 flip maneuver for the booster to make its way back to Earth, SCS-1, and the start of the boost back burn.
2 Alpha.
Copy, 2 Alpha.
And incredible views. We've had MECO stage separation. You can see that booster coming back down to Earth, and that MVAC engine has ignited, which you can see clearly there on your screen. And the Dragon spacecraft with Crew 12 is still attached to the Falcon 9 second stage. The next milestone that we have coming up will be the start of the stage 1 boost back burn. That burn is the first of 3 burns that Stage 1 has to help it return back to Earth.
We are now 3 minutes and 30 seconds into today's flight of Crew 12. The second stage of the lone Merlin engine has lit and continues to burn, as you can see on your screen. Stage 2 continues to be performing well with a good trajectory and will continue firing until we reach about 8 minutes into today's flight. And we're getting our first view. Getting good call-outs of the trajectory, as well as our first views of the crew inside Freedom. A few minutes remaining in this burn before a couple of these astronauts will experience weightlessness for the first time. The crew's G-load did dip right when we hit that MECO, or main engine cutoff event, and now it's going to continue to build up again until the second stage shuts down. Everything still continuing to go well, now 4 minutes and 45 seconds into today's launch of Crew 12. Second stage will continue to fire until close to 9 minutes into the flight, which will accelerate Dragon to more than 17,000 miles per hour and place our crew in orbit. This Merlin vacuum engine can produce over 220,000 pounds of thrust in the vacuum of space.
Meanwhile, the first stage booster is now on its way back to landing zone 40. Stage 1 is coasting, has already coasted to apogee, and the grid fins are helping to guide it back to Earth. And we've already had the boost back burn, so the next event coming up will be the entry burn. That will be 3 of those 9 M1D engines reigniting, and that helps slow the vehicle down as it's re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. Once that entry burn concludes, we use the drag from the atmosphere to help slow the vehicle down until landing. And that entry burn is coming up in just about 20 seconds from now. Falcon 9 does have a heat shield that is designed to protect the engines and the vehicle from that combined thermal and aerodynamic loading during max entry Q, which is the moment of max stress on the vehicle during entry. And you've heard that call out. The entry burn has begun. And the entry burn has concluded for the first stage vehicle. 2 of 3 burns done. Next up will be the landing burn for the first stage. And everything continuing to be nominal. We're about 20 seconds away or so from that landing burn starting up on the first stage. It'll be a single center E9 engine that ignites and helps slow the vehicle down just in time to touch down for landing at our newest landing zone 40. We have just a couple minutes. Landing burn has begun. Let's watch as Falcon 9 touches down. And what an excellent view of Falcon 9 touching down for the very first time at landing zone 40 at Cape Canaveral Space Force Station.
Congratulations. That is so exciting to see. And on your screen, you also have a great view of the second stage continuing to fire. That burn is going to last for just about another minute, and then we'll have SECO, or second engine cutoff, which will occur where the lone Merlin vacuum engine cuts off and stops firing. Once that happens, the second stage will continue to coast for about 3 minutes while still attached to Dragon, until Dragon is then commanded to separate. At this point, Dragon will be flying free with Crew 12 on board and in Earth's orbit.
Copy, Shannon.
And that call out for Shannon refers to Shannon, Ireland, and is our final abort zone in the second stage. Continuing to get good performance after this second stage. There we had that call out for SECO and engine shutdown. That is great news.
Dragon copies, nominal insertion. Wonderful ride.
Hearing good call outs following second stage. You heard that call out that the crew is in a nominal or as expected orbit. So again, we're going to continue to coast for a few minutes after SECO to allow those rates and motion from the burn to settle out. There are some small reaction thrusters on the upper part of the second stage that can be used to counteract any residual motion, basically making sure that we're in a stable coast before Dragon separates from Falcon, which will happen, as you see on your screen, right on time. Dragon now flying free.
Dragon copies.
A great view with the Crew 12 crew on board Dragon Freedom separating from Falcon 9 second stage.
Thank you, team. That was quite a ride. Thank you, SpaceX, Falcon 9, and NASA teams. We have left the Earth, but the Earth has not left us. When we gaze at our planet from above, it is immediately clear that everything is interconnected. The vast oceans, the continuous land masses, and all that they contain. We are one humankind here on our shared home planet. This becomes self-evident as astronauts peering down from above, and is a sentiment that would serve us all well to remember back on the ground. We see the thin, tenuous band of an atmosphere fully responsible for supporting all life on this planet, and we know that it is utterly unique, fragile, and must be protected. For supporting and watching our journey, please know that your spirit travels with us, stitched into the very fabric of all that we do. We hope that our arrival in space reminds all of you that dreams truly can become reality, given dedication, perseverance, and yes, a bit of luck along the way. Crew 12 is grateful and ready for the journey ahead. We're on our way. Okay?
Центр управления, экипаж, Dragon, Freedom на связи. Мы на целевой орбите. Все системы работают штатно. С этой высоты наша Земля выглядит невероятно хрупкой и целостной. Здесь не видно границ, только тонкая голубая линия атмосферы, которая защищает все живое. Именно этот вид напоминает нам о главном. Это одна команда на одном корабле в планете Земля. Каждый виток вокруг нашей общей голубой колыбели – это доказательство того, что возможно, когда наши нации объединяют знания. Сегодня наш экипаж и эта станция – это результат работы тысяч специалистов из разных стран. Мы здесь не как представители отдельных государств, а как человечество, которое исследует космос, чтобы лучше понимать и мы продолжим работу на благо всех. Спасибо за доверие и поддержку. Dragon Freedom, связь с вами.
Thanks to the flight control, engineering, manufacturing, and ground support teams around the world. Successful launches of humans to orbit is a testament to your technical mastery. This precision in this unforgiving environment. We fly with confidence because we know that the finest minds on Earth are watching our backs. And I'll pass it over to Sophie.
Thanks, Jack. For Crew 12, this is our first orbit. For humanity, it's just one small moment in the vast journey of exploring our world and beyond. From up here, we're reminded that we're all connected. Take care of one another. Dream big together and keep reaching higher. That's how humanity moves forward and how we make each other proud.
We copy and appreciate those words, Crew 12. We saw nominal dehumidifier activation and service section Draco checkouts. Nose cone deploy continues nominally as well.
And with...
Yeah, thanks, Mary.
With those words from our four Crew 12 astronauts, the crew is now well on their way to the International Space Station. That is, of course, their destination where they will be docking tomorrow. You also heard a call out that the nose cone was underway for deploying. The hooks are driving to open up that nose cone. It's going to remain open all the way through the journey uphill, as well as once it once Freedom docks to the International Space Station, and will remain open throughout the mission and will close once the crew does depart about 9 months from now after their science and research mission. So it was wonderful to see Crew 12's launch today. Congratulations to the NASA team, the SpaceX team, and of course to Crew 12. It's great to see you on orbit.
Yeah, again, we did get confirmation that the nose cone deploy is underway. The six hooks that hold the nose cone in place during the launch and ascent portions have to retract, and then the nose cone will be able to start to swing open and deploy. This uncovers a number of critical systems for the flight up to the space station, including the forward bulkhead thrusters and the docking hatch. And the call from the core here in Hawthorne indicated that we did have good checkouts of the 12 Draco thrusters around the service section. Four to go after we get the nose cone open and the ECLIS, the environmental control and life support system, activated inside Dragon. And we've got a view here, seeing that the nose cone, this is from the forward bulkhead section of Dragon, this nose cone is opening up, and that's what you're seeing on your screen. It's about 30% open at this moment. Soon the crew will be able to get their visors open and get out of their suits and settle in for the ride to the space station. And again, this does take a few minutes for the nose cone to fully open. It's a pretty slow and steady process, but it is underway.
And it has been an exciting and jam-packed series of events following the liftoff of Crew 12 at 2:15 a.m. Pacific time today. Crew 12 is comprised of NASA astronauts Jessica Meir and Jack Hathaway, as well as ESA, or European Space Agency, astronaut Sophie Adenow and Roscosmos cosmonaut Andrei Fedayev. They are now safely in orbit following an approximately 9-minute ride after a liftoff from Space Launch Complex 40 in Florida. The crew now has a 34-hour journey before they reach their destination, the International Space Station. Docking is targeted for February 14th at 3:15 p.m. Eastern, 12:15 p.m. Pacific, to the space-facing port of the station's Harmony module. Between now and then, Dragon will perform a series of burns as it catches up to the space station, and that first burn will be a phase burn, which will occur about 30 minutes from now.
Human spaceflight has come so far in the last 6 years with Dragon. In addition to flying people, SpaceX's Dragon spacecraft also enables researchers the opportunity to fly critical science to orbit. So far, SpaceX and Dragon have carried more than 1,000 research experiments to and from low Earth orbit, both to the International Space Station and on our free flyer missions. From DNA sequencing to 3D printing studies enabled by Dragon and the space station, test a variety of technologies, systems, and materials that will be needed for future long-duration exploration missions. Every mission yields critical research and learnings that help make life both on Earth and in space better. And flights like today's help us continue to lay this foundation for our future among the stars and continue our mission to make life multiplanetary. Now, we'll be signing off from SpaceX for now, so we're going to send it back over to Kennedy Space Center. But before we go, we want to thank NASA for entrusting us with today's mission and thank all of you for being with us today.
Absolutely, Jesse. And we did just get confirmation as well that the nose cone is 100% open and opened as expected. So that was the last major milestone that we were tracking from here on our end. But I do want to say thank you to SpaceX as well for everything that you do and all of you who tuned in as well to support today's launch. We are going to say goodbye from here in Hawthorne until we pick back up coverage for docking beginning at 1:15 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, February 14th, for targeting docking to the
Dragon,
space.
SpaceX, we saw a nominal nose cone opening, TCS, and forward bulkhead Draco checkouts.
Copy.
And again, that confirmation that nose cone is
Dragon,
fully
there
open.
There are 5 minutes remaining in our current ground station pass. At this time, you are welcome to introduce your zero-G indicator.
Microgravity indicator consists of 4 satellites orbiting a crocheter, all handmade elements by Jack's daughter and my childhood best friend. Crew member selected a personal symbol or satellite. Other links each satellite to the Earth, representing connection to our families, friends, and our one shared home. There's a panda holding a mushroom. Two adorable symbols of environmental importance and cultural fascination. Pandas are modern icons of species preservation and international diplomacy and a pivotal character in my childhood. Mushrooms, the fungi, are the great decomposers, all life on Earth depending on them to keep our soils healthy and food webs functioning.
I chose the moon that my daughter hand crocheted. Each color woven into the design represents a member of our family or cherished shared activity. By bringing this piece with me, I keep our bond close, allowing me to relive happy memories while looking forward to the ones we'll create when I return.
I chose bananas are the world's most common fruit, ordinary fruit shared by billions of people across every continent. Yet, on orbit, fresh fruit is rare. I wanted a cool reminder of kitchens and homes, a familiar piece of Earth drifting weightless with us.
Я выбрал свою часть, потому что именно эта штуковина напоминает мне об одном из художественных фильмов времен Советского Союза, который я смотрел в детстве. И я на самом деле предлагаю попробовать вам угадать, что это за фильм. Буду рад где-нибудь от вас это услышать.
We present to you Planet Gaia and her moon. Floating here in Crew-12's Dragon.
And with that, we had, again, we copy Dragon. And with that, I can let you know that we had nominal GNC checkups. Our next burn is our phasing burn per your forward view.
Copies will be monitoring.
A little bit of a description about the Crew-12 zero-G indicator that they selected called Planet Gaia. They each shared some great words about what they contributed as part of that zero-G indicator to let them know that they are officially in the microgravity environment of space. So that was so cool to hear what they each had to say and how they are bringing a piece of Earth back with them and something that's meaningful to them. So Crew-12 is successfully in orbit, and we are targeting a docking tomorrow on the space-facing port of the Harmony module at 3:15 p.m. Eastern. So for now, thank you for joining us here in Hawthorne. We're going to toss it back over to Daryl and Doug at the Kennedy Space Center to wrap up today's coverage.
Welcome back to the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. I'm Daryl Nail here with ESA astronaut Claudie Añure. So good to have you here. Thank you for doing this interview post-flight. The significance of Claudie being here is tremendous. You were the inspiration for ESA astronaut Sophie Adonau, who at age 14 watched you fly as the first French woman to go into space back in 1996. That inspired her on her journey when she said something clicked. She knew she wanted to be an astronaut. You just witnessed your protege take that inspiration from you and fly into space. And I'm wondering what you felt, what you experienced in that moment.
I'm really pleased to be with you. I thought it would have been a quiet joy with pride for Sophie. It was so hugely emotional to see her with this successful launch. So I'm really happy because I know that sometimes girls or boys need some turning point in order to make their dream come alive. And if I have been this one for Sophie, to see today the brightness of the past, that's wonderful.
Incredible. And she shared, Sophie did, during her press conference, that you wrote her a letter before she went to go on this launch. Would you share some of the words that that you gave, that you hand wrote to her?
The letter was for Sophie.
Okay, understood.
Maybe she has a letter in her pocket. it was not advice, because I think everyone has its own path to come with a dream. It was mainly experiences, lessons learned, in order to say, don't forget that, or be careful with, and the flight will be long, so take everything for you and enjoy.
Great advice, great advice. As this mission unfolds, and it will be a long one, up to 8 months, how will you be experiencing or keeping track of this mission as she does the science and does the work that she's going to do aboard the ISS?
I'm hugely grateful to the teams that support the experiment and all the work on board. I do remember 30 years when I flew with a Soyuz on the Mir station, who had almost no communication with the ground. But nowadays, 99% of communication with real-time transfer of data, and it will be possible for her to be close to the family, close to the friends, and close to the teams for the experiment. So we will have some way to discuss and to exchange.
If you had any words that you could say to her now after watching her take off into space, what would you say?
Good speed, but it's already done. They enjoy. They maybe the crew that they will meet on board a big hello, because that's international collaboration and cooperation. This is wonderful. And then be careful with your program, scientific program, because you are here for that. And enjoy and please share with us. We need the transmission for inspiration for the younger generation.
What you did for her, she can help pay it forward
completely
to the next generation. And as it was on the license plate on her vehicle, bon vol. Right. Have
bon
a good flight. I don't know if I said it right.
Have a good flight. Bon
Have a good flight. Yeah. Claudia Agnure, ESA astronaut and first woman from the country of France to go into space. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your thoughts on the second woman to go to space.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to turn our attention now to the International Space Station, where Crew 12 will join Expedition 74 and head over to NASA's Steven Seisloff, who's joined by International Space Station Program Chief Scientist Jennifer Buckley. Steven?
Thank you, Daryl. We are here with another inspiring person. This is Jennifer Buckley, the Chief Scientist for the International Space Station Program. And Jennifer, the crew that's going up there on Crew 12, they're going to perform dozens of experiments during this long-duration mission. One of them is turning potable water into IV fluid. How does that help future explorers?
That's right. Out of about the 250 experiments this crew will perform, one of them is IV Gen Mini. So this is building off of some research we've already done on ISS, learning how to make IV fluid bags real time on orbit. So commercially, those off the shelf only last about 16 months. So it's really important as we step out into the solar system to explore that we're able to support the crew medically. And so we're going to be doing a tech demo on board.
Outstanding. Now, Artemis 2 that's lifting off in a few weeks. They,
Dragon,
of course, been informed by a lot of the research that's taken place on station. What are some of those ties between space station research and what the Artemis 2 crew is going to be doing?
You know,
Poppy,
space station is a perfect proving ground for exploration, both to the moon and Mars. So for the vehicle itself, a lot of the life support systems are informed by the research that we've done on ISS, proving out those systems, everything from their onboard toilet to their water-based fire extinguisher to help keep the crew safe, inform how we do space flight safely as we go farther.
And when you're looking at Artemis 3, the mission coming up that'll land astronauts on the moon, how's the space station research that's taking place now helping with that mission?
Space station research, not only do we have the astronauts do research, but they also are subjects themselves. So we've learned a lot about astronaut health through the time of International Space Station. We also, on Artemis 2, are flying tissue chips with crew cells on them. So this is really neat. It's a program we started on the International Space Station. So we're going to be taking a look at the effects of crew members as they leave low Earth orbit. And then finally, you know, those beautiful views of Earth that we see from the International Space Station are also really science. And so all of the imagery and technology that we've developed from that are going to help us take imagery and analyze the surface of the moon as well.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Thank you so much for being here this morning, Jennifer. And Daryl, we will go back to you and Doug. And how bright the future looks thanks to all this science taking place.
Absolutely, Stephen, and thank you very much to you and Jennifer Buckley for her interview. Well, we had some social media questions that we weren't quite able to get to, but Wheels has promised me he wants to answer them. So we're going to get those questions to him, and then he's going to post the answers on his X account, Astro Wheels. So thank you for following through on that.
Absolutely. It's actually Astro_Wheels.
Okay. Good note.
I'll meet you there.
On X. Thank you very much. We appreciate that, Wheels.
Absolutely.
Well, that is going to do it for today's launch coverage, but of course, Crew 12's journey is just getting started. After the beautiful liftoff from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station and a successful trip to orbit, the crew is now on their way catching up to the International Space Station. Docking is targeted for Saturday at 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time. NASA Plus coverage begins at 1:15 p.m. Eastern Time. And so, Doug, as they get ready to dock with the International Space Station, the excitement of being in space for the first time will be this first one day in 10 hours, and then they'll get to work when they get into the space station.
Absolutely, and actually the approach to the rendezvous and docking with the space station, when you first pick up the space station in the windows, it's like, wow, it's like a castle in the sky, you know, it's just quite amazing as you approach the station. It took my breath away. Seeing how large it was, how magnificent it looked in the sky.
And one of the things they'll be seeing, what we've been seeing from the X accounts of the astronauts and the International Space Station, is the solar activity is so high. Have you been seeing some of the northern lights that come from space? Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Follow these astronauts that are on board, and they're going to be taking some incredible imagery of the lights at the poles, so the northern lights and the southern lights as well.
And they're beautiful on the ground, as we know, but up in space, the red-topped part of those green-ribboned waves.
Dragon, SpaceX, burn complete and nominal. In addition, the environment looks good for suit doffing. You have a go for procedure 4.012.
Copies, nominal burn and go for 4.012.
SpaceX Dragon, come check from the cabin mic.
Dragon, I have you loud and clear from the cabin mic. Tell me.
Loud and clear too.
Dragon, SpaceX, delayed call, but ground has pulled go for the upcoming oop burn in 8 minutes.
Dragon copies.
Dragon, SpaceX, burn complete and performance nominal.
Dragon copies, nominal burn.
Dragon, SpaceX, for off-duty briefing, report and ready to copy.
To copy.
Alrighty, Dragon, with that, you are officially off-duty. Nice job on the entire ascent and pre-launch phase of flight. I wanted to check in first to see your desire to complete an optional PMC.
Hi, Mary, checking. And Mary, back with you. We would like a PMC, please.
Copy on crew desire for PMC. I'm going to have you stand by while Flight Surgeon gets set up. In the meantime, I wanted to just let you know of a couple reminders for off-duty. Report and ready to copy.
I'm ready for those reminders.
Copy. These are just our general off-duty reminders, but wanted to remind you that you have the crew sleep flag in 4.050 to let us know when you guys are snoozing. And in addition, we're going to be backing you up and following along with suit drying from the ground, and I see you still have your suit doffing procedure open as expected. We're going to give the flight surgeon a moment or two to get set up, and then I'll be back on board letting you know when we're ready to step into PMC.
Okay, we copy all. Good reminder about the sleep flag, and we do have a timer going, so we are still waiting for that 20-minute timer for suit drying before we finish out that procedure.
Copy all. Sounds good, Dragon. I'll be back on board when we're ready to complete PMC. Dragon, SpaceX, we have flight surgeon all set up, and the next call you hear will be from them on Dragon to Ground privatized.
Copy.
Dragon, SpaceX, Dragon to Ground is no longer privatized. Comcheck.
Copy, then we have you loud and clear.
Copy, Dragon. With that, I have you the same. I don't have any other notes for your off-duty briefing. Is there any questions for the team?
Questions for now. We will let you know if we have any.
Copy.
So much, Mary, for the support from everybody. It is awesome to be back in space. Andre and I are feeling right back at home, and Sophie and Jack are super excited.
We appreciate those words, team. From all of us sitting here in Mission Control, we had a blast doing it with you guys.
Next, Dragon.
Go ahead, Dragon.
Yeah, we wanted to complete that report that 4.012 is complete. We did leave cameras exterior for now since we're off duty and we'll probably be getting ready for bed soon, but let us know if you're good with that.
SpaceX copies 4.012 is complete, and we understand, and we are good with that. Dragon, SpaceX for handover.
SpaceX, Dragon, go.
J Dragon, just wanted to let you know that we're going to be handing you guys over to the very capable hands of Core Arthur and the rest of his shift to be stepping into 4.050 with you guys.
Dragon copies. Thanks, man.
Next, Dragon for 4.050.
Go ahead. With you in 4.050.
Arthur, how you doing down there? I can give you 3.2 is complete. We have power cycled the displays.
Copy that. Complete through 3.2 for power cycle of the displays.
We also have a couple more things to report. First of all, we see that the cabin temperature is pretty high. It's 27 degrees. You know, we have a procedure to do that, but we're wondering if you could lower the temperature for us somewhere around 22 degrees, if you think you know the right setting for that.
SpaceX copies, we were tracking that cabin temp. It had been rising, but then rolled over. We are ready to support some commanding to try and lower that temperature. And just that request, your target was around 22.
Affirm, 22 would work well. Then I have one more thing that's a bit of a funny, maybe it's just something that we've never noticed before, but we had used the waste fan a few times for some toilet ops, and, you know, just getting acquainted with the sounds of Dragon, there's kind of a large fan noise up there, and I was wondering, just checking, the waste fan actually is quieter than I would have anticipated, so like sometimes it's difficult to tell if it had really turned off. So I looked in the systems diagram and saw that waste fan 1 and waste fan 2 both read idle. Waste fan 2 was at 0 RPM, but waste fan 1 was reading 290 RPM. Both Jack and I noticed that. It was actually still in the idle state, and it was a square as if it was not on. So we did a power cycle on it just to see what the change would be. We turned the fan off. We saw it stay start up and saw the fan speed increase far beyond that 290. And then when we turned it off again, it did go to 0 RPM. How copy?
Okay, I'll go through step by step from what I'm copying. During waste fan use, first, the fan noise is quieter than expected. Is that a good readback?
Affirm. It's just, it's not abnormal, but I think because of all the background noise, which of course we're not used to, I was assuming that the waste fan, what I'm used to on ISS is it's really, really loud, so you can always hear when it's on or not. But for this one, it's kind of subtle. You can hear it start up and turn off, but with the background noise, it kind of blends in.
Okay, copy that. We will go ahead and just take a look at the data and make sure that the waste fan power consumption and performance is expected and nominal, and I will follow up with you once we've looked at that. But we were not tracking any issues on the ground so far. But again, I'll follow up on that one. The second item that you had reported was looking at waste fan 1 showing idle but with still showing an RPM. You guys performed a test where you turned on the waste fan and turned it off again where it returned to idle with a 0 RPM.
And just to clarify, really those two problems are not problems, but two things are one in the same. You know, we were just familiarizing ourselves with Dragon, and I wanted to look at the telemetry to make sure that the waste fan was truly off, and that's why we noticed it was at 290.
Okay, copy that. We'll look at the RPM reading with the waste fan powered off. So we're going to dig into the data there for the waste fans. Again, we are tracking no concerns on the ground, but we'll go ahead and follow up with you on that. I see that you are going through section 3 of 4.050. So would you like us to follow up on this waste fan if we see everything normal? Or would you like us to wait on following up on the waste fan if everything's normal until after the nap period?
Great question. We will enable the sleep flag, so you, unless there's a problem, you don't need to call us. We'll just wait until our wake period or our next call, but no need to report. For a little bit of added information, if it helps, that power cycle and when we noticed the data, it was just before 1554 Zulu, 1554 Zulu, and we had used the toilet several times in a row, but as I mentioned, we did turn it off, and then afterward, just in checking the telemetry to make sure it was off, that was when we saw the fan speed.
Okay, copy all. I think that I have a good understanding of what you guys have observed up there. We will follow up, and I will track the do not disturb flag, or the sleep flag. If that's off and we have an answer, I'll go ahead and call you back on the nominal report. Otherwise, I will only call you if we identify an issue in the system.
That sounds like a good plan to us.
All right. Thank you for this update. And just to confirm, we in MCCX, we will take some commands to work on lowering the cabin temperature.
Yeah, thank you.
Dragon SpaceX for awareness. We have commanded the HEX position to full open in order to start cooling off the cabin temperature. It is a rather slow time to effect, so we are going to continue to monitor, but we will expect the cabin temperatures to begin to drop. At this time, and with that commanding, crew control of the HEX bypass in your cabin temperature procedure is not enabled. However, we will be returning it to crew control once we see the cabin temperature response.
Okay, Dragon copies all. Thank you. SpaceX Dragon.
Morning, Dragon.
Good morning. Just letting you know that we're awake.
SpaceX copies. Crew is awake. You've got Nick here with Shift 2 for another 2 hours or so. Let us know when you're through waking up and when you're ready for a wake-up status update. Take your time.
Thanks, Nick. We'll go.
Dragon SpaceX, no response required. We're coming up on a 3-0 minute expected LOS, and we will catch you on the other side.
We copy, Nick. Is that starting right now, or do you have time for an update first? We're ready for that if you are.
We've got about 3 minutes, and I do have a couple of topics to go over with you, but overall, we do have a healthy vehicle on tracking, no issues, no deltas to your timeline at this time, and we had a nominal phase burn while you were asleep with nominal performance. I can get you the other items on the other side of this LOS, and we can talk it through then if that works for you.
That sounds good. We'll catch you on the other side of the LOS.
Dragon SpaceX, comm check with Tedris AOS.